We heard yesterday in general about the 64 angas of Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, and we heard specifically about the first three, which are considered, or the first two rather, so important. There's Guru Parasrai and Sri Krishna Diksha Adi Shikshanam. That means accepting initiation from the spiritual master and receiving instruction from him. And the first one is Guru Parasrai. First, we must find the shelter of the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master. The third point on that Rupa Goswami says, is still in the same verse, Guru Parasraya, Ado Guru Parasraya, Sri Krishna, Diksha Adi Shikshanam, and then Vishram Vena Guru Seva. Vishram Vena Guru Seva. And that means serving the spiritual master with faith and confidence and actually with affection. Tadbiri pranipatena pariparasena sevya ubhadakshanti te jnanam gyanena satpadarshanam. Bhagavad Gita, when describing in the fourth chapter, which is entitled, what is the title of the fourth chapter? Transcendental knowledge. So, the beginning of the fourth chapter describes how to get transcendental knowledge by approaching a spiritual master in the disciplic succession. Imam vivasvate yogam pruktavaniham abhravam. Vivasvan manave prava manor ishvakave bravit. This is the process of getting transcendental knowledge, and later on in the fourth chapter, the same process is explained. Tadbiri pradipatena. If you want to get spiritual knowledge, you approach a spiritual master with all respect and reverence. Upadek shanti te jnanam. Ask him questions, and he will serve, and you serve him. He will serve you by giving you transcendental knowledge, and your business is to serve him in this fashion mentioned here with faith and confidence and affection and respect. Why respect? Because he, as said previously, is the representative of Krishna. And he is taking that respect not on his own behalf, but as a servant of his guru and Krishna. Sometimes there's so many controversial things occurring in ISKCON about guru. Sometimes it is said that the spiritual master must be on the Uttama platform, the highest of all platforms. Naturally, the devotee will see his spiritual master like that. Because why? Because this Uttama energy is coming to him from the Krishna's energy is coming to him through his spiritual master. So he'll see his spiritual master, the Krishna Shakti, coming through his spiritual master naturally if the relationship is proper. But then sometimes, and I heard in Los Angeles recently, there was some, and this went on a few years ago too, there was criticism. These people are not Uttama, these spiritual masters are not Uttama Adhikaris. And they're not on the same level as Prabhupada. Which one of them, and someone once wrote me a letter, which one of them will say that he is an Uttama Adhikari? And they are so proud saying that they're Uttama Adhikaris and they're so qualified like that and all these things. So, they're so proud that they're initiating others. So this type of logic is disastrous. First of all, it is basically envy. It's so painful to the disciples of the spiritual masters to hear this kind of thing. The actual thing is, the qualification for the spiritual master can't, it never can be said that the qualification, not it never can be said, but it is not said that the qualification for a spiritual master, Prabhupada didn't say the qualification to become a spiritual master is an Uttam Bhagavat for this reason, because who will say, let them stand up, those who are Uttama Bhagavats, ready to take their position, let them stand up and let's see. Because what kind of a devotee will say that? So although the disciple will see his spiritual master as an Uttama Bhagavat naturally, because naturally Krishna's energy is coming through him. Krishna has chosen him to represent himself to the disciple. But the qualification that we look for in a spiritual master, and that the spiritual master will be willing to admit, is that he is the servant of his spiritual master. I'm simply the servant of my spiritual master. I'm just carrying out the orders, the message of my spiritual master. And if someone is purely doing that, then he is a qualified, bona fide spiritual master. That is the base qualification. That he is a servant, he is a good disciple of his spiritual master. And he's always engaged and he's fixed in Shastra. And he has no other interest other than the service of his Guru Maharaj. This is the qualification that we speak about. Prabhupada once told me in Hong Kong, he said, someone is saying that, oh, I see Krishna all the time. So that's the Uttama platform. We want that. So someone will say, I see Krishna all the time. And you're always wary of a person like that. And that's the qualification you want? How is it provable? And then Prabhupada gave the example of the telephone rings and you don't want to answer it. So you say, oh, I have a headache. Oh, my head hurts so much, I can't speak on the phone now. Why do you use that as an excuse? Because it's all internal. And no one can check to test to see whether you actually have the headache or not. So if you use the criterion that someone is Uttama Bhagavat, how will you check? So therefore, if someone, the qualification that we use, the basic qualification we use, is that he's a servant of his spiritual master. A pure, unadulterated servant of his spiritual master. And then we can be confident that all will work well. And therefore, in Prabhupada's last days, he said, when saying what the qualification for a spiritual master, he said, he who knows his spiritual master and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he can become a spiritual master. The desires of Mahaprabhu. Okay, because we have to finish this, and if we get involved in questions right now, we won't get too far, so I'll try to go fast, although I might not succeed. And then we'll ask for questions. So the fourth point is Sadhu Vartmanu Vartanam, that he follows in the footsteps of saintly personalities, of Shastra, Sadhus, the previous acharyas. This is the fourth principle of sadhana bhakti, that one follows in the authority, follows the footsteps of the authorities. We don't imitate, but we follow their example. We follow their words, and we move on. We don't concoct our own way in devotional service. Vart manu vartanam. I don't think we'll ask that as a question, but it's nice to know. And one should follow, according to his qualification, not just imitate. And the example always given is Lord Shiva, who the people want to imitate Lord Shiva's behavior. The followers of Lord Shiva want to imitate his behavior when smoking marijuana or ganja, but they don't want to imitate his behavior when drinking the ocean of poison. So when you're qualified and powerful enough to drink the ocean of poison, then you could also take that kind of intoxication and not be affected as Lord Shiva was. So one should follow according to his adhikari or qualification. And secondly, when dealing with the shastras and the footsteps of the saintly people, you follow. If you don't follow out of laziness or ignorance, you don't know what to do, so you don't do the right thing, or you're a little lazy, it is not the best, but it is not offensive. But if one is skeptical of the sadhus, the great acharyas, if one is skeptical and one doesn't follow for that reason, that is aparad. You got a question?
I just want to know the quotes from those four factors.
What four factors? It's just the combination of those four that I mentioned. That's the verse.
I couldn't find it.
Huh?
I was trying to find it.
I'll see if there's another reference for it in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Did you look in Chaitanya Charitamrita? Teachings of Sanatana Goswami?
I would like to know that further.
Okay. Next, number five, is inquiring about eternal religious principles. So if one is actually very serious about understanding, knowing about devotional service and how to prosecute devotional service, all his desires will be fulfilled very soon, and he will very quickly achieve his results. So this eagerness is very important. So the eagerness comes in the way of desiring to know. That is one of the ways that the eagerness comes. We want to know about the process of Krishna consciousness deeply, about eternal religious principles. So if one is actually very serious and eager to know about the process of devotional service and about Krishna consciousness from top to bottom, that's what in the second chapter of first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, Shunvatam svakata Krishna punya shravana kirtanam vrijyantasto yabhadrani vidunoti saritsatam. That Krishna quickly removes all the abhadrani, or the inauspiciousness, from the heart of a devotee who is a truthful devotee who is eager to hear his messages, the message of Bhagavatam. If we are eager to hear, Krishna appreciates that. He will remove, he will give us the knowledge, and he will also remove the inauspiciousness from the heart. Number six, being prepared to give up everything material for Krishna's satisfaction. So for one who has given up his material sense enjoyment and has accepted the principle of devotional service, the opulence of Vishnu Loka, the kingdom of God, is awaiting. So this is very encouraging for us who have a taste for material opulence. So the materialist is thinking like this, actually, that if I perform austerities now in my material life, later on I will get my success, I will work hard now, and later on I will enjoy. So it is almost like that. If we give up everything for Krishna's pleasure right now, the opulences of the kingdom of God will be waiting for us. But the actual greatest opulences of the kingdom of God, of Krishna Loka, is the loving relationship with Krishna. There is no greater opulence than that. In Vrindavan itself, there are two things. There is Aishwarya and Madhurya. Madhurya means sweetness, and Aishwarya means opulence. In Vaikuntha, there is the predominance of Aishwarya, or opulence. When we see pictures of Vaikuntha or Krishna in Dwarka, We see great palaces and many guards and opulences and marble palaces. And in Krishna Loka, this Aishwarya isn't prevalent. Rather, Krishna's favorite decorations are not unlimited gold and jewels, but rather the forest flowers. But actually speaking, the opulences of Vrindavan, the Aishwarya of Vrindavan, is the greatest of any place. But if the exhibition of Aishwarya or all opulence was predominant, then the devotees would not be able to exchange the sweet loving exchanges that they like. So the madhurja, the sweetness of the devotees' love in Braja, makes the Aishwarya seem minimal. But actually it is the greatest. So that is actually the greatest opulence, the sweetness of the dealings between Krishna and his devotees. And that is what is available in Braja. Number 7, residing in a sacred place. And actually in the Brahma Samhita, Lakshmi Sahastra Satasam Brahma Sevyamanam, it describes how there are hundreds and thousands of Lakshmis or goddesses of fortune or gopis serving in Vrindavan. So although Lakshmi is unsteady in the material world, she is steadily fixed in Krishna's service in Goloka Vrindavan. So that is the best place and the most opulent place. So there is no loss if we give up something material for Krishna's pleasure. There's only gain. So we should live in holy places. So what are the three holy dhams of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? One,
Mathura.
Yes, Mathura. And when we say, and again it will be said later, Mathura Vas, that means Mathura Vrindavan, the whole general area of Mathura. Now I know you're not going to say Jagannath Puri. What one are you going to say? Navadip, Sridham Mayapur, or Navadip Dham. And the third Dham for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas? Jagannath Puri, yes. Lord Chaitanya had pastimes in these three places. Jagannath Puri is considered which place in Krishna Leela?
Kurukshetra.
Yes, but which place? What other place? For the opulence. And where is, if you understand Rath Yatra according to Srila Rupa Goswami Mahaprabhu, you will immediately answer it is? Yes, but that's not what I asked. I asked what place in Krishna Leela?
Roka.
And then Navadvipa is which place compared to Krishna Leela? Where Mahaprabhu had his childhood pastimes? Vrindavan. And then what is Vrindavan though?
Braj.
Huh?
Braj.
Yeah, Vrindavan is Vrindavan. What do we... So we should live in a holy place, but there is one other holy place that we should live in that hasn't been mentioned here, and that is the temple. If we cannot live physically in Vrindavan, or Mayapur, we should live there mentally. And whether we have the capacity to live in Vrindavan or Mayapur mentally or not, we should live in a temple, which is no different from Vaikuntha. Why is the temple no different from Vaikuntha? Because, and why is it not the material world? Because in the temple, everyone is serving the deity. The deity is the center of the temple. And any place where Krishna is the center, that is Vrindavan. So we should learn that, and we should know that for a fact, and we should also always make sure that we make Krishna the center of our existence in the temple. These holy dhams are very special to live in, and of course, living in a temple is very special. We should not live in the material world. Number 8, accepting only what's necessary. Prabhupada explains, one should not accept more than necessary if one is serious about discharging devotional service. The purport is that one should not neglect following the principles of devotional service, nor should one accept the rulings of devotional service, which are more than what he can easily perform. This is niyamagraha, niyamagraha. One should perform the rules and regulations properly in devotional service. We shouldn't sleep too much. Not yet. Na tastu yogosti na chaitanta manasnata na svapi silasan jagrito naiva charjana. One should not sleep too much, sleep too little. One should perform this devotional service intelligently, properly. And also, one should take what he needs to maintain himself in his spiritual life in bhakti. That's material needs and his spiritual needs. One should accept not more and not less. One should accept what is necessary. And Prabhupada gives the example of one need that we should perform. It may be said that one should chant the Hare Krishna mantra at least 100,000 times daily on his beads. It's actually, it is said, 100,000 names, 1 lakh of names daily on beads. That is, 1 lakh of names is approximately 64 rounds. 100,000 names of Krishna is approximately 64 rounds. So that is the standard. Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur said, anyone who doesn't chant 64 rounds a day is fallen. When Prabhupada was approached the disciples, told them, early days in Haight-Ashbury, Frederick Street, 1967 in San Francisco, he told them to chant 64 rounds. He said, nope, too hard. Because how many hours is that chanting? Approximately 8 hours. Huh?
At least 8 hours.
Haridas Thakur used to chant how many lakhs a day?
Three.
How many hours a day would that take?
24.
At least 24. By your calculation. So, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said 64 rounds. Prabhupada said 64. The devotees said, we can't do that. Then he said 32. They said, we can't do that. He said 16 and not less. There was no question of we can't do that. 16 rounds and not less. That is our standard for living in the temple. Some Gaudiya Vaishnava groups, they say 16 rounds if you're not too busy, then 4 if it's not too hard. But that was not Prabhupada's standard. It was not the standard of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. But if this is not possible, 1 lakh is impossible, then one must minimize his chanting according to his own capacity. Generally, we recommend our disciples to chant at least 16 rounds on the japa beads daily, and this should be completed. But if one is not even able to chant 16 rounds, then he must make it up the next day. He must make it up the next day. And I've seen devotees sometimes saying you have to make it up, and they say I have to make up 156 rounds, and they just keep adding to how many they have to make up. But that's not what Prabhupada is saying here. He's saying that you must make it up the next day, not you chant 2 rounds for a day for 2 weeks because you have so much work to do. Chant 2 rounds a day for so many weeks, and then after the marathon is over, then you have 150 rounds to make up.
How many rounds Prabhupada chanted was 20?
How many rounds?
Yeah.
I never asked him that question. We would not ask Prabhupada how many rounds a day are you chanting, Prabhupada?
Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, anyone who didn't chant 64 rounds a day is fallen. How many rounds a day are you chanting, Srila Prabhupada?
I asked according to this principle required about an eternal religion principle, according to the principle I asked this question because I
yes. Yes, that was my answer.
What kind of format is their program in the they're chanting 8 hours a day.
No, most of them don't chant. And nowadays in the Gaudiya Mass, they don't chant.
But previously, even when
but I think it was, if you don't, if I think it actually was that if you are not fully engaged all day long, you chant 64 rounds a day. Someone had to manage. And I see that they were chanting, when it's done properly, they would chant just it's basically what Prabhupada said, there's a minimum. And then you try to chant 64 rounds a day. That's basically the idea. But they didn't have the type of preaching engagements and the work that we have. You know, we're a different, I mean, during, I don't know about exactly during Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's time, but we're always very, very, we have huge, huge, huge plans and huge, you know, on Prabhupada's direction, we want to save the world, make the whole world Krishna conscious. So of course that was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's mood also. And also, but he was dealing with a lot of the people he was dealing with were more in the mode of goodness than us who, you know, must have so much passion, we have to work and work and work and work for Krishna. But in any case, not less than 16 rounds a day. Okay. If one does not strictly follow this out, then he is sure to be negligent. That is offensive in the service of the Lord. If we encourage offenses, we shall not be able to make progress in devotional service. It is better if one fixes up a regulative principle according to his own ability, and then follow that vow without fail. That does not mean that one should not. I can only chant to 1968. And he said, because it's the 11th day of the moon. That's why we fast. I thought it was in memory of the Rasa Lila or something like that. I didn't have any idea. I didn't have much more idea after also. But the 11th day after the new moon and the 11th day after the full moon are very auspicious for making advancement. So on that day, we minimize what we do materially and maximize what we do spiritually. This is our attempt. Best thing, so Prabhupada said to me in that letter also, I asked him, should we have feasts without grains? Or fast completely. And he said, better if you fast completely. But if that is inconvenient, you should eat a little. So we should eat as little as is convenient. If you can do nirjal, no water, some devotee told me, I do nirjal every Ekadasi. I eat, but I don't drink water. Wrong philosophy. So the real point is not to fast. This is not the main point. The real point is to increase the hearing and chanting. This is the real point, to increase one's hearing and chanting. And if one could increase it up to the degree that one doesn't have to worry about eating or sleeping, staying up all night and chanting, and one can do that, that is glorious. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said, Madhavatiti Bhakati Janani. That means that this Madhavatiti, the day of Madhava, especially means Ekadasi. This is Bhakati Janani. It gives birth to Bhakti within the heart. It is very powerful. It is number 9. Number 10, offering respect to the aswat or banyan tree. One should offer respects to the holy trees, such as the banyan tree, the peepal tree, the aswat tree. And also, Prabhupada explains in here, one should offer respect to cows and brahmanas and serve the Vaishnavas by offering them respectful obeisances and meditating upon them. All these processes will help the devotee to diminish the reactions to his past sinful activities. So we should be respectful to the banyan tree, cows, brahmanas. Now, how to respect a cow? This is described by the acharyas. There's three things. This is actually from the Gautamiya Tantra. There are three ways to respect the cow. One is gently scratch the body of the cow. Cows like that, especially here. And here, behind the ears, they like that very much. And all over they like scratching. Yes, yes, I've seen. Last time I was by the bus station going to Delhi. I can't remember, I think it was last year or something. And this cow came over to me and wanted me to scratch. So I scratched and scratched and scratched under here. Behind here, and the cow was going like this, really enjoying. And then the cow wandered away to get some water. Then it came back and came to me again. And I was busy chanting my japa or something like that, and I wouldn't scratch it. So it hit me with its horns and kept on going. It was angry at me. I should have respected the cow. That's the first thing. The second is offer a mouthful of green grass. And the third is circumambulate the cow. If you keep, and you always, when you circumambulate, you keep the object you're circumambulating on your right. On your right side. So these three things, and you will please the cow, and if you please the cow, Gopal will be pleased. Next, 11, giving up the company of non-devotees. This is so important. When Lord Chaitanya was asked, what is the activities of a Vaishnava? There are so many positive activities, vidhi, that a Vaishnava does. What is the activity of a Vaishnava? But Mahaprabhu answered in the negative, what is the main quality of a Vaishnava is asat sanga tyag, a Vaishnava tyag, that he gives up the association of asat, or the non-devotees. Stri sange eka bhakta, Krishna bhakta eka sadhu. So one type of person that we should give up is one who is attached to women, especially one who is attached to women, and one who is attached to women. And those who are non-Vaishnavas, we should not intimately associate with them. This doesn't mean that when you see your mother, you say, Mother, I'm a devotee now, a satsanga tyaga. You know, you're not a devotee, therefore I cannot associate with you. Not like that. What it means that that we don't keep deep, deep, intimate relationships with or associate deeply with those who are not devotees, because they cannot understand devotional sentiments and they will give bad advice. And those who are attached to women. And associating with those who are attached to women is even worse than associating with women. Why? Is because when a man associates with a woman, there is some etiquette involved. The woman is a little shy, and she won't just speak anything, and the man is a little shy. But when you speak to a man, when you associate with a man who's attached to women, he'll talk the worst kind of nonsense, because the shyness isn't there. He'll just speak the worst, lowest kind of garbage, and will pollute your mind. And it's so dangerous, because What goes into our ears affects our mind, and it puts sanskaras or impressions in our mind. We should not put material impressions in our mind. Why? Because we will have to fulfill those. They will leave jayato vishyapung san sangaste shokajayate. When we get material impressions in our mind, we will think about them. And if we think about them, we will meditate on them. And if we meditate on them, we will lose all our intelligence. And we will end up doing them. We should not. And these verses are so heavy that it is, even if one is forced to live within a cage of iron or in the midst of a blazing fire, he should accept this position then rather than live with a non-devotee who are through and through against the supremacy of the Lord. Or it is better to embrace a snake, a tiger, or an alligator rather than associate with persons who are worshippers of various demigods and who are impelled by material desires. Next, 12. Save your questions, write them down. We'll try to have time. Not accept unfit disciples constructing many temples or reading many books. This is 12, 13, and 14 of the 64 angas. It's three in this one. Not accept unfit disciples. So there's something very important in this. The first principle is that if one has mastered these 11, first 11, and is up to this one, then one is qualified to accept disciples. This is what is said. So Prabhupada gives some very practical instructions in this. A person may have many disciples, but he should not act in such a way that he will be obliged to any of them for some particular action or some favor. And one should not be very enthusiastic about constructing new temples, nor one should be enthusiastic about reading various types of books, save and except the ones which lead to advancement of devotional service. Jiva Goswami says, don't accept disciples out of greed. This is the point here. Out of selfishness. And Prabhupada explains here, and it's actually Jiva Goswami's point, that without increasing the number of disciples, there is no propagation of the cult of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sometimes even at a risk, a sannyasi in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu may accept even a person who is not thoroughly fit to become a disciple. Later on, by the mercy of such a bona fide spiritual master, the disciple is gradually elevated. However, if one increases the number of disciples simply for some prestige or false honor, he will surely fall down in the matter of executing Krishna consciousness. And one should not let his disciples increase his desire for puja, be worshipped, lava, lobe, greed, pratishtha, etc., because they will ruin one's devotional service. So that these are the dangers. So this injunction, Jiva Goswami, that one should not accept many disciples, is especially meant for those devotees who are living, doing nirjan bhajan, solitary bhajan. If one is alone in seclusion, especially one should not do this. This is not, Jiva Goswami said, actually meant for preachers of Krishna consciousness. The proof is Narada Muni had so many disciples. And Jiva Goswami explains that if a spiritual master, a qualified sannyasi or qualified Vaishnava doesn't take disciples using this as the reasoning, he will become guilty of miserliness of knowledge, not giving out what he has. But the point is that both spiritual master and the disciple should be qualified, then accept so many disciples. I once heard a tape where Prabhupada was explaining a similar point to this, and he said that sannyasis who aren't willing to take the risk, because if you preach, naturally people come forward and ask to become your disciple. If you're not willing to take the risk, then you should not preach. That's what Prabhupada said.
So there's a risk involved. When you initiate, you don't know exactly what's going to happen in the future. So there is a risk involved. But for the preaching movement to spread, for Mahaprabhu's mercy to spread and Prabhupada's desire to become fulfilled, then there must be an increase of spiritual masters and an increase of disciples. Amara Gyai Guru Hai Tarai Desh. Mahaprabhu instructed that one should become Krishna conscious and deliver your country. Become Guru and deliver this land. Amara Gyai Guru Hai Tarai Desh. Don't become rascal guru, just want to become worship, because you will find out very quickly that you are not actually master, spiritual master, you are servant to everyone. Because everyone comes to you and tells you what they want from you, how you are expected to serve them. So therefore, if you are looking for puja, desiring so many things, do something else. Go get a job. You get it in that way. Become a corporate executive. It will ruin you if you try to gain material facility in this way. One becomes a spiritual master on the order of his spiritual master. And then one remains only a servant. And if one is thinking, the disciple is thinking of himself as of his guru as spiritual master, and the guru is thinking of himself as spiritual servant of his Guru Maharaj. This is the system. If he thinks himself guru, it will not work. So these are instructions are there. Too many temples, it doesn't mean for preaching purposes. There should be, in every town and village, there should be temples. But it means a temple so I can live in it and show the deity and crack the walnuts, get something to eat. So Prabhupada has explained this very clearly. Straightforwardness in ordinary dealings and equilibrium in loss and gain. There is a statement in Padma Purana, persons who are engaged in Krishna consciousness should never be disturbed by some material gain or loss. Even if there is some material loss, one should not be disturbed, but should think always of Krishna, should always think of Krishna within. That not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's desire. So this has happened by Krishna's desire. The purport is that every conditioned soul is always absorbed in thinking of materialistic activities. He has to free himself of such thoughts and transfer himself completely to Krishna consciousness. Because, as Prabhupada explains, and as we explained right in the beginning, that the purpose of all these rules and regulations are to help us think about Krishna and never forget Krishna. So this mentality is necessary for pleasing Krishna. If we want to actually be able to please Krishna, love has to develop in our heart, bhakti. And this mentality is conducive for bhakti developing. The demigods. One should not neglect to offer due respect to the demigods. So we say, Srivasya si Vishnu yai guna namari sakalam diabhinam pashet sakalo hari namri takara. One of the offenses is to consider, namaparaj is to consider the demigods equal to or independent of Lord Vishnu. So that has two sides. One side is we should not think them independent, and we should not worship the demigods. Excuse me, we should not think them equal, and we should not worship the demigods. But the other side is that we should not think them independent, and we should understand that they are empowered agents of Krishna, and they should be given respect. One should not disrespect the demigods either. One should not worship the demigods, nor should one disrespect the demigods. Sometimes the devotees, when they're young and their culture isn't proper, they disrespect the demigods. And this is also offensive. This is also namaparad. Because they are empowered agents of Krishna. We should not worship, nor should we disrespect. We can criticize how people are worshipping the demigods improperly, avidipurvakam, not properly according to the rules and regulations, but we should not disrespect the demigods. And Mahaprabhu, he would go into the temples. We should not also accept the prasadam that has been improperly offered to demigods. In other words, offering it to the demigods directly. Properly, the prasadam should be offered to Vishnu, and then when it's Vishnu prasadam, it should be offered to the demigods. And then we can take. But if it is offered improperly, directly to the demigods, we should not take it. It will contaminate our consciousness. Giving pain to any living entity. One should not give pain to any living entity. Very important point. One of the anarthas in the heart is called jana aparad. That means offenses to ordinary people. We shouldn't think, oh, I'm a devotee, everything I do is transcendental, so therefore these people are fools, they're dirty karmis. So therefore I can do anything, I can cheat, lie, steal, hurt them, do anything, doesn't make a difference, karmis. Should not think like that. That is an improper attitude, will cause great problems in our progression in Krishna consciousness. We should be respectful, we should follow the example, even when preaching. Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur said, he gave the example of preaching, my dear sir, you are very learned, you are very wonderful, you know so many things, you are so qualified, you please forget everything and listen to what I have to say about the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sometimes Prabhupada, or very often Prabhupada, would not take exactly that mood. He would say, these rascals, they are cheaters, they are rascals. But that was mostly to make sure that we do not compromise in our hearts and get enamored by these people who are actually rascals, who are averse to Krishna. We should not get enamored. So the preaching was to make us, to make sure that we were strong. But if someone preached strongly also, fearlessly saying that, calling a thief, when someone was cheating, to stand up and say, this is cheating, and call the scientists rascals, sometimes Prabhupada was very happy. Because it meant that they were strong, strongly fixed in Siddhanta, the conclusions of Krishna consciousness. Okay, the homework that we finished up to 18. Next, read the next two chapters. That means 8 and 9. So 8 explains so many offenses to be avoided, and 9 further consideration of devotional service principles. Read both chapters. It's quite a bit, and answer the first 4 questions only. Answer the first 4 questions, read both chapters, answer the first 4 questions in the homework, and then the next day you'll be asked to answer not all the remaining questions. Can I see if there was one I cut out, but I didn't bring the sheet with me. You won't have to answer 7, even though it's an interesting one, but it's not practical to give it. So the following day, all the rest of the questions, 5 through 11, will be required except for 7.
This fifth question is that we listed 30 the offenses. That means that we should write down or only remember?
No, be able. We won't be able to check whether you're able or not.
So we shouldn't write down, I see.
You shouldn't write down. You should be able. If I said there are 64 offenses to avoid, you should be able to list at least 30 of them. Probably you know 30 already. Huh? Well, anyway, you should be ready to know them. Okay? Yeah.
From the beginning you discussed about Yatriti Shavati sisters. And then, so my question was, Anup Shiva, he knows that whatever, well, if he does something and according, people will follow. So how, knowing this, how can he slow down that?
But he also The same criticism could be leveled against Krishna for dancing with the gopis. So we say that when you can show the universal form like Krishna, or when you can separate yourself into so many people to dance between all your gopis, when you can, there was thousands and millions of gopis, and there was Krishna gopi, Krishna gopi, Krishna gopi. So he separated himself, expanded himself into so many Krishnas. So that was to show that it is not ordinary. So one should follow in the footsteps, but one should not imitate the activities of the great controllers and personalities. You can lift up Govanand Hill, and you can dance with the gopis. So the great person, just like Prabhupada, did so many amazing things. And then in 1976, on Rath Yatra in New York, he was walking in the street, and he was thirsty. And he asked for some 7-Up. And he drank 7-Up. Some. And then all the devotees, "Oh, Prabhupada drank 7-Up. 7-Up's bona fide." And then from then on, for the next few years, 7-Up was bona fide. And then after 7-Up became bona fide, it was very easy for all soft drinks to be bona fide. But before that time, no devotee would ever drink any soft drink, except when the devotees came to India. They got into it because they would say the water isn't good. And that's the only way we know that it is okay. But now, it is not considered the slightest bit improper to drink a soft drink. Not the slightest bit. But it wasn't always like that. It was never like that in Prabhupada's presence. So should we say, just like Prabhupada, if you drink this 7-Up, do you understand that the devotees are going to... No. But we should understand that the great personalities, they can do whatever they like. There's no problem. It is done for the benefit of the universe. And if we imitate them, not follow their words and instructions, but imitate them, doom will be ours. We can't expect, we know yad yadav charati shvetas, that everyone should set a good example. But a devotee can't live his whole life only on that principle. Sometimes there are other things he has to do.
You could do something we understand it, you should do something more, but like drink
an ocean of poison. So foolishly, the Vaishnavas don't do that, right? Even the Vaishnava devotees don't smoke. But it's the foolish people who want to take advantage of Lord Shiva, use him as the excuse to engage in intoxication. So they do it. When someone wants to cheat, you cannot stop him by all the rules and restrictions, etc. You cannot stop a person who is insincere. Prabhupada once said, you keep a thing locked up, you keep your possessions locked up, not to stop the thieves from stealing, but to keep the honest people honest. Because a thief will steal anyway, because he's a thief. So these restrictions and these explanations are for sincere people, the honest people. That is the explanation. When we first got this Goshala land here, it was completely covered in marijuana plants. Completely. That was the crop, it seems. And there were so many seeds from years of it going to seed that it took years before no marijuana was growing there. It was the sadhus. And even right outside the Goshala, there's this one little sadhu hut. And they have marijuana growing there. We don't want to increase our intoxication. So people will always misuse things. And we don't worry about those people who want to misuse things for their own selfish purpose, looking for the excuse. This tastes horrible.
You didn't take this. Yes, mother. That's affection. We should never judge what these great personalities do. Should never judge.
Prabhupada is a preaching center without the mental apps considered sacred.
If Krishna's the center, yeah. There should be some worship going on. All our preaching centers, it's not that no worship goes on, right? There's a picture of going to die, right?
Is it all right to worship more obstacles than the
service? At one time I did. I was just writing about it too in Prabhupada. He said, why Ganesh? We had a little Krishna, a little Balaram, and a little Ganesh. But no, it's not appropriate. Not so appropriate. One devotee asked that to Prabhupada, he was doing business. So Prabhupada said, when you can give me, if you guarantee me, I don't remember if he said $10,000 a month or $100,000 a month, then you could worship Ganesh. Not necessary. But if you're going to worship him, there is a way to worship him according to, that is, there's no harm at all. In the Brahma Samhita, there are very sweet prayers that worship him as a servant of Vishnu. So there is no harm actually, but it is not in our sampradaya to worship Ganesh. So we follow. If you worship C.C. Radha and Krishna, Krishna Balaram, and then all the obstacles can go away because Ganesh is empowered by them. He's the source.
If somebody has already made a previous promise to Ganesh,
we already described this. This is pratikova bhakti. If you made a previous promise to Ganesh before you were a devotee, and then you became a devotee, for instance, and you think that if I don't honor Ganesh, there'll be something lost, this is not the proper attitude. This is not anyavilasita sunyam gana kamahanavika. You should know that Krishna will protect you. That Ganesh will be pleased if you directly serve Krishna. Unless you promise Ganesh to bring him Krishna Mahaprasada, then you should do it.
In residing in sacred place, it's mentioned about Vaku stays for 6 months or months or even for night in Varaka, awaiting his elevation to Vishnu lotus. And also in the Nectar of Destruction mentioned that one could take even one bath in Radhakund, awakening his love for Krishna. How should we understand this?
This will be explained later, that these things have happened, and they can happen. Anyway, when we come to that point, it's in a few days, within the next 2 weeks. It's explained very nicely by Prabhupada.
We take so many beds.
Yeah, I'll explain it then. Don't be faithless. Or else we'll take away your privilege of bathing in Radhakam.
You don't notice that the devotee gives respect to banyan trees. What is proper procedure and action?
Water. Don't go like this. Give them grass.
I don't know why. You also respond to this question. You ask us, what is our realization? Why do we worship?
No, just say your realization. I have no realization.
How one should worship?
Water.
What?
And also,
Can you explain about how the absolute saint about building
Why we should, especially because the point is, even quite a few reasons. One point is that the tendency is to get involved in external things, and the devotee's main business is to get involved in internal things. But that doesn't mean for preaching we shouldn't build temples, but for sense gratification we shouldn't build temples. We're willing to do so many things for preaching in the service of Guru and Gauranga. To give ourselves a nice room, we shouldn't build a temple, so that people will come and offer money so we can maintain ourselves. Okay. And we shouldn't. It's to help us make advancement and not get enamored by materialism. That's the idea. Okay, last question.
If one common sinful activity is understand of chanting the holy name is
that
he goes, and the person goes to hell, because of it. If one common sinful activity is understand of chanting the holy name,
yeah,
he goes to hell. But in the nature of instruction also, it is said that those people who are attached to meaning and intoxication must be often affected in meaning and pain.
I don't get the connection. A Vaishnava is respectful to everyone. Even an ant. It doesn't mean that you follow them. I mean, that's all. Prabhupada told me that. A Vaishnava is respectful to everyone, even an ant. But you cannot follow an ant. That means not too much sugar. Okay, here are the grades. Srinivas, who? Unless I become inspired, I won't mention any. Vinod, Bihari, 96. Bhakti Vikash, 93. Good. Narayana Dwarapu. Drista, 99. That's the highest so far. Krishnadas Kaviraj, who? 90. Gaur Nataraj. Oh, good. Bhakta James. 102. Krishna Bringa. 94. Oh, yeah. Pundarik Vidyanidhi Prabhu. Ram Gopal Prabhu. 95. Narottama Prabhu. 92. Poonachand, where's Poonachand? You can see if there's any problem with that. Sastra Surpuru. Kanteya. Give this to Kanteya. Pass it back, please. Hey. Wait. Bhakti Yuktesh. Where's Bhakti Yuktesh? Where are you from? 96, good. Amit Prabhu, 99. Madan Mohan. Good. Okay. If you want to yell at somebody, first yell at Ram Gopal Prabhu, and then later you can yell, and then he'll yell at me. Okay, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Generally quite good. Thank you.